This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, the very best bits of today's show from Sunday, April the 11th, lovingly put together by producer Shruti Rajendran. Hey, Shruti.
Hello.
So we're going to start with Serena Kelly looking at some of the top stories for us and then get onto the flight over the weekend, EK 2021 and the vaccination flight, which by all accounts was really cool. I kind of wish I'd gone.
It was announced a couple of weeks ago that this will be a flight with all vaccinated crew and all vaccinated passengers. And our very own Nadia Swan was one of the people on those flights. And she spoke to some really interesting people about when we can expect air travel to resume to the previous numbers before.
You know, I figured out why I wasn't on the flight. Well, partly because I'm a vaccine volunteer, not a vaccine certificate holder, but also because, frankly, I'd have just been sat in my seat enjoying the F&B, kicking back and watching a movie. But Nadia spoke to Adel Al-Reda from Emirates Airline, the COO, one of the senior vice presidents at Emirates, the guys from Airbus. It was an A380, the guys from Dubai Health Authority. She's just running around working.
She was.
Yes.
You wouldn't have done that.
I would not have done that. No, I would not. I would have been pressing, bing, hello, yes, please, can I have one more? Yeah, that would have been me. Looking back at the life and times of Prince Philip of the UK, a man who, Tom Urquhart, to say he knew him is disingenuous, but he met him. And Tom does know quite a few members of his family.
Yes, I mean, out of the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of us, Tom is the one who's got the closest to Prince Philip. So we'll give him that.
He is our royal correspondent.
He is, but
we live in Prince Charles as well.
Yes, we do.
And talking hotels as well, because more and more evidence that the Dubai's hotel industry really is bouncing back. Did you hear us talking about how much it costs to stay at the, the Mandarin tonight on Jumeirah Beach?
No, I know you said one of them, one hotel was sold out when you looked.
We looked at the closest hotel to us here in Media City, we think is the one and only Royal Mirage.
Mm.
We could probably hit it with a driver on a good day. And you can't, it's minimum 2-night stay and it's 6,000 dirhams.
Wow.
Wow, that's punchy. And I thought, what about other hotels? The Mandarin Oriental down the other end of the beach road. It's a posh hotel.
Yeah.
Standard room tonight, how much?
1,500?
8,500.
Oh!
For the normal room, 50 square metres, a suite costs, a junior suite, not a posh suite, a junior suite, one night, tonight, 18,500 dirhams.
Ooh.
I'm not making this stuff up. So the point being, we're going to hear from Bruno Trenchard of CBRE about the fact that Dubai was the second best performing hotel market in the world last year.
Yeah, and mostly driven by domestic tourism. And then we did wonder whether the domestic tourism campaigns did make that difference.
I think they probably did. Anyway, something's working, whatever it may be. All that to come. First up, though, here is Serena with the big stories.
Ask Serena.
Morning, Mrs. Kelly.
Morning, guys.
Good to have you with us. Let's dive straight into the number crunching, if you will, the cases and the doses.
So over the last few days, you've had figures of 2,112 new cases. That was on Thursday. Friday, 1,875 were announced. And then yesterday, 1,931 new cases were announced. You had more than 237,000 tests conducted across the UAE. So out of the total reported 481,937 cases in the UAE. We're going to break the figure down for you. That includes your fatalities. We had 3 yesterday, so at 1,529. Recoveries, 1,833, which was less than your actual new cases. It's the first time that's happened in a while. So total recoveries, 466,804. But of course, your active cases, a little bit of an increase from the day prior, so we're at 13,604. And then vaccine distribution, more than 8.9 million doses of COVID-19 vaccine have been administered across the country so far. Distribution rate of 90.74 doses per 100 people.
How many doses did we put in the arm yesterday?
So it was more than 51,471 in a space of 24 hours that were administered. And the day prior to that, 33,972.
Big focus on vaccines over the past 24 hours with that Emirates flight EK2021. We're going to hear more from Adel Al-Reda on vaccines and its implications for the aviation industry. And then someone who was on the flight, our colleague Nadia Swan, going to be joining us in the studio.
Did she bring back duty free? Do we know or not?
Actually, there is a very large bar of Toblerone sitting in the top drawer, which is supposed to be for us to share, apparently. It is huge.
Wow.
Yeah. Sorry, I forgot to mention it.
Colin will be happy. Get the cash registers turning over again. Colin McLaughlin of Dubai Duty Free. Listen, not aviation, but astronauts.
Incredible. The UAE's announced its first female Arab astronaut. So His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, Vice President, Prime Minister of the UAE, ruler of Dubai, took to Twitter yesterday sharing the news. There was a video as well. It's up on the Air and News Centre app. But he announced the next two astronauts to join the UAE space programme, Mohammed Al Mulla and Noura Al Matrushi, the first Arab woman to join an astronaut program. So they join Hazza Al Mansouri and Sultan Al Niyadi. So you had more than 4,000 people apply when registration opened back in December 2019. They whittled that down to 2,000, then the best 1,000, down to 122, then 61, 30, 14, and then out of that, there was 9 males, 5 females, then you had the final 4. So they've definitely been through some stringent processing there. So now we have the final 2. Their training will start soon, part of the NASA astronaut program. They're going to be trained in human spaceflight, research and spaceflight control, also trained to carry out missions in low orbit, as well as manage various missions on the International Space Station. All while representing the UAE and the country's ongoing space program.
I'm looking at her CV, basically, to figure out, well, what do you need to become an astronaut? She's got a bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering from the University of the UAE, member of the American Society of Mechanical Engineers. And in her childhood, she secured first rank in the UAE's Math Olympiad. That was back in the year 2011. Day job is an engineer with the National Petroleum Construction Company. So clearly a woman of some talent and obviously some application as well.
Yes, definitely. And I believe Mohammed Al-Mulla is connected with Dubai Police, I think, with their Air Wing division. But so that, because they were tweeting as well yesterday quite proudly of his being acknowledged by His Highness.
Certainly
well.
A big international story. Lots of people covering Noura Al Matrushi's selection for the astronaut programme. Now, back down to earth, Serena Kelly, in the Emirate of Sharjah. Good news for parents, teachers and kids today.
Yeah, very much so. So it's back to school for students for most students in Sharjah today, but they do have the option of returning to the classroom, because if you recall, Sharjah had extended that 100% distance learning in all government and private schools as well as nurseries until the end of the spring term. And last week, the Sharjah Private Education Authority said in-person lessons can resume. So the private school students, though, heading back to schools in Sharjah today for private school, point to note, if you're over 12, don't forget you do need to present that negative COVID-19 PCR test, and results can't be more than 72 hours old. I think over the break as well, most schools across the UAE will have sent out emails to parents regarding if there was any international travel, because most will have those regulations in place on returning. You need to fill in a form, also specify if you have travelled abroad over the recent break.
Good stuff. Tom, we've got loads of questions coming in from Serena this morning, haven't we? We've got, for example, Monica wrote in about cars. We've got a question about the gap between vaccination doses as well. What's caught your attention?
Yeah, let's do the cars one first, shall we? From Monica. Morning, Monica. Question for Serena, nice and early. Have the restrictions for the number of people that ain't your family in your car being lifted? It used to be 3 people per car. Has that changed at all?
No, it's still the same. So the limit is still 3. Mm-hmm. Unless you take a Hala taxi, then there can be 4 passengers, including the driver. And then, of course, depending on the vehicle, like I know, obviously you've got buses, there's certain limitations there as well, because you've got the physical distancing and spacing as well. But if you're actually driving your car, driver in the front. If you're taking non-family members, there should only be two passengers in the back. Taxis still have that regulation in place as well. And then if it's a family, you're all the same, from the same family, you're allowed, it doesn't matter how many people are in the vehicle, and you don't need to be wearing your masks as well. But three in the car, definitely need to have your masks on as well.
This one's from Majid. He's been in touch. Morning, Serena. As I understand that the period between two shots of vaccine Sinopharm is 3 weeks. However, I got a text asking me to come after 5 weeks. Has this time between jabs changed?
No, but it could be something to do with the appointment scheduling and just getting people in. But I know the only one that does have that extended was the AstraZeneca. So, but yeah, normally it should be like 21 to 28 days. But yeah, I wouldn't be concerned if you're a few days out from your actual due date.
Thanks for answering those questions.
No problem.
That's
anything
very
for
kind
you.
Of you. Thank you.
Let's talk about cannons.
So Ramadan due to start this week. Dubai police have been readying the traditional cannons that mark the start of the holy month, as well as obviously they fire off for iftar as well, notifying when you can break your fast each day. So with that in mind, the authorities have confirmed spectators will not be allowed to gather and watch the cannons firing shots during the holy month. So, of course, it's in line with COVID-19 restrictions, precautionary measures. So they clarify people can watch the traditional custom. It should be it will be broadcast live on various TV channels as well. But they've been set up in 6 different locations across the Emirates. You've got Atlantis, the Palm. You've got Burj Khalifa, Al Mamzar Beach, just to name a few.
Serena Kelly, thank you very much indeed.
More details on the Aero News Centre app.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
And we've got a big focus, haven't we, on travel today, Tom? You mentioned this just a few minutes ago. You're going to be speaking about the boom in tourism here in Dubai. I use the word boom reservedly. But second best in the world? Who are you speaking to later?
We've got Bruno Trenchard of CBRE. He's going to be joining us in the second hour of the show. So, yeah, just to reflect on these figures, the top line on that being that the tourism sector has done really well. They've recorded some extraordinary numbers. The second highest hotel occupancy in the world in the face of the coronavirus crisis. Is that because of the decisions taken by organisations like Dubai Tourism and other tourism authorities here? Is it because people have been looking for other options, etc.? And is there going to be something of a legacy as a result of that? Are more and more people convinced to come to Dubai, to the UAE for parts of the year or for the whole of the year? We'll be diving into these figures. But yeah, they've certainly come out in what has been a very, very difficult time for tourism worldwide. If anyone was to have come out of it well, certainly the UAE could put their hand up and claim that at the moment.
Well, that's certainly the view of Adel Al-Reda, who's the chief operating officer of Emirates Airline. He was on EK 2021 yesterday. That was the flight where all the passengers...
Did you see it?
All the crew were vaccinated. I heard it. I didn't see it. What did you learn?
No, I completely forgot to look. but what time, do we know what time it took off?
It took off at lunchtime.
Okay.
Because I know Swanee was on it.
Yeah.
Nadia Swan.
Yeah.
And she interviewed Adel Al-Reda. And I've listened to her interview overnight. We're going to hear it this morning throughout the show. But this is a sneak preview of what he had to say. And he's pretty much echoing what you said, Tom. The reason that the UAE is not top of the charts, but second in the charts, is because it balanced the very delicate balancing act of locking down the economy to save lives, but also keeping businesses, keeping the economy up and running to preserve prosperity. So this is Adel Al-Reda saying that the flight yesterday, which was a flight to nowhere, wasn't it? It took off from Dubai, landed back in Dubai, had a couple of hours flitting around the UAE.
Did a couple of donuts up there.
Exactly.
A couple of wheel spins.
Yeah, it looped the loop. It didn't loop the loop. It was an A380 or it said 777?
I think it was
an A380. It didn't loop the loop. It was a perfectly normal flight. But Adel was speaking to our reporter, Nadia Swan, and this is what he had to say.
Today's flight is a clear demonstration on the people's willingness and wanting to travel. And I think we have demonstrated by ensuring the right measures, people will go back to flying. Vaccination will play a big role in reducing and changing the current protocol. So I believe once we are more people take the vaccine, we will see more changes to the protocol and more flexibility in the current protocol in terms of quarantine or any testing required. I think it's a great demonstration, and we have never seen a full flight for many months now.
He says that Emirates is ready as and when various countries around the world do lift the protocols as he described them.
We are at Emirates 100% ready to bounce our flight any minute. We are operating right now more than 143 Boeing 777 aircraft, and we're operating about close to 15 A380s to the current limited destination we have got. We are looking to increase the A380 deployment very soon in the summer. It's going to go to about maybe 30 or 45 aircraft, depends on the destination. But based on what we have seen so far, there would be more countries allowing flight to resume, and not only resumption flight, but all the frequencies. So I think it will be a busy summer.
One of the big routes that he's looking for, that Emirates is looking for, is the resumption of the Dubai-London route. More importantly, more broadly, the UAE to the UK route. This is why.
We have seen during the December and January, all our flights were 100% full. If I take UK, for example, we are operating 5 flights a day, A380 to UK, and they were all operating back and forth full. I think we have seen the recent announcement of the UK government of that. They are looking at by about 15th or 17th of May to relax and change the protocols on air travel. From what we have seen, the vaccination program proved to be very effective in UK, and the number of cases have dropped significantly. We are very optimistic that there will be a change in that protocol, and we'll see more of traffic back and forth, and this corridor of air travel most likely is going to come back in during the month of May and or soon after that.
And when it does come back, finally, we might be sitting, Tom, in a nice, comfy, premium economy seat, which none of us has ever done on Emirates before. They've got a handful of A380s with the premium economy seats. This is why.
We have noted that there is a gap between the economy and the business class, especially in certain corporate sectors. And having to have another layer of seat or category or class between the two will give more opportunity for travelers to go from economy to premium, who may not necessarily wanting to go to the full business or traditional business class. And I think it is needed within the industry. Particularly, it's going to help a lot of corporate businesses. But at the same time, it will be. There is many of people in the leisure side of it. We will take advantage of that. We're not offering it for sale at this time. And we have noted there is a great feedback from the people who have used the business class, who used the premium economy. It's a very luxurious seat. It gives you a good comfort. It gives you a very nice seat pitch. And then I expect it to be full all the time once we offer it to the commercial.
It's the voice of Adel Al-Reda, COO of Emirates Airline, talking with our own Nadia Swan.
Where we'll be joined in studio by our intrepid colleague, Nadia Swan of the ARN News Centre. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Tom.
Feedback on the ground.
Yes, absolutely. Feedback on the ground. It took a while.
This is after, of course, Emirates Airline operated a special flight that carried only fully vaccinated crew and passengers. And one of those passengers on board was, of course, Nadia. So tell us, how did this come about in the first place?
How did I get to go on there?
Yeah.
How did the flight come about?
How did you blag your way onto the flight?
I don't think I can reveal my sources, actually, Tom. I'm sorry, you know, otherwise I'd just have to kill you. So,
good experience?
Let's just say I was in the right place at the right time.
Good experience?
It was just amazing. Really, really amazing experience. I mean, so many of us, we just haven't been up in the air for well and over a year. So just the whole thing of going through and immigration, duty-free lounges and just experiencing what they've got in place at Dubai Airport was just amazing, really, and a great experience being back in the air.
How did in terms of sort of the paperwork, let's get that out of the way first. I mean, how did you have to prove that you had been vaccinated?
Yes. When I was asked to go on this flight, I had to provide them with my passport and also my vaccine certificate. So that had to be sent through. You didn't have to have your PCR test sort of 72 hours beforehand. But what you did have to do was at the airport, there's a rapid PCR testing facility. So you go in there and it's all very well organised and you get your result back in under 15 minutes. And then off you go. So that was that. And then when you go into the check-in area, for the first time, you have to go and present your passport and stuff. But they've got these little, they look like tablets almost, but they then take your biometric details off you. So you stand there, take your mask off. They take all that. And then after that, once that's in the system, you're good to go with all the other biometric stages, like trying to get into the lounge, for instance, or when you're boarding. It's all completely contactless and you don't have to come into contact with anyone.
I mean, given the fact that very few of us have been to an airport recently as well, I mean, was it noticeably different, the whole process of getting the airport experience, as it were?
I think it was different because there's just not that many people. I was in Terminal 3, and normally you expect to see Terminal 3 heaving. Well, it certainly wasn't. I mean, it was really very, very empty. So you didn't have that busyness in kind of duty-free and around the actual airport because there's so few flights really at the moment. But apart from that, the rest of it was noticeable by the fact that you didn't really have to speak to anybody at all or come into contact with anyone at all if you didn't want to.
Was the flight busy?
The flight, yes, very busy indeed. They had first class and business class up at the top, and I had a little quick peek into that while I was talking to some of the people that I had the opportunity to speak to. And then downstairs on the bottom of the A380, you've got economy, and then you've got premium economy, which is situated in front of that. So that's at the front of the aeroplane. And oh my word, it is spectacular.
Is it?
Yeah, it is really nice. You know, to all intents and purposes, you could be in business class. The seats are fantastic. They're padded, they're cream leather, they're anti-stain, so you don't get those horrible marks and things on them over time. They've got if I talk in aviation speak, which, you know, I've now learned whatever there is to know about premium economy, a 40-inch pitch on the seat, so you've got a lot more leg room and space in between your seat and the seat in front, and then the seats actually recline 8 inches, so you can get really comfortable there. Leg rest, foot rest, and your screens are bigger. Just really well laid out, and just even down to little details like where you charge your phone and where you charge your laptop, much more accessible, all those things.
Seems like the who's who was on the flight as well, just judging by the people that you were able to get interviews and sound bites with. So certainly well attended in terms not just of Emirates, but also Airbus and other and the manufacturers, yes, those involved.
Yes, that's right. There was really anyone who's anyone. Yes, sorry, Richard.
You can hear from some of them now. Mikhail Houari is the president for Africa and the Middle East region at Airbus. It was one of his planes, wasn't it? The
A380.
This is him explaining to Nadia how vaccines are going to get passengers travelling again.
What is important is that we get out of this pandemic, and the vaccine is the way out. And the UAE have done so many efforts. You know, they are among the top countries, you know, where vaccination is so easy, free of charge. They have vaccinated so many people. We saw this in December. Passengers want to fly. You know, when the frontiers were open, you had the whole world coming to Dubai, and airports were full, and hotels were full, and restaurants were full, because everybody wants to travel. So the only thing which is creating all this burden is, unfortunately, this COVID crisis, which has affected so many of us. But now, with this, things will change. And this is a recovery. And you see, an airline like Emirates is fully confident about it.
And I know, Nadia, you were speaking to the guys from Emirates. We heard earlier on your interview with Adla Al-Reda, the chief operating officer, but also the guy who runs passenger services and hub operations. Nick Moore is a senior vice president. And I was really interested in his comments. Let's hear from him now, talking about, you touched on this, biometrics and the contactless travel experience.
We find a lot of our customers want to have more control of what they do in the airport. Mm-hmm. They feel the airport is full of people. They feel the airport is a place where they potentially it could be unsafe. So we've gone the extra mile and we've planned and we've purchased and we put an amazing, I would say the best self-service bag drop environment in the world, right in the middle of our economy check-in. If you look at what's happening in the world, if you give people the choice, they'll take it. So we're finding that people will register because they know that registration can ultimately mean contactless wherever you are in the airport. So if you register for contactless, then you use a biometric bag drop. You approach the screen and then you can take a picture of a QR code. And so you can check yourself in on your phone. So you don't actually have to touch anything. So the whole check-in process, if you don't do it at home and you come to the airport, you can do it on a QR code on your hand phone. So after that, you will then proceed through the biometric gates at immigration. Again, avoiding anybody.
Nick Moore of Emirates.
So it really was the system that they've got in place is really remarkable. But as you were saying earlier, there was a lot of very important people on that flight. Premium economy, they had economy where people were buying seats for 1,000 dirhams. And I spoke to all sorts. I got some Vox Pops. There all sorts of people there for various reasons flying, very excited about it. And then in premium economy, there are a lot of Emiratis, gentlemen and ladies, VIPs. And they were, again, you could tell the whole cabin, the whole aeroplane was just excited, pleased, overjoyed at just being able to get back up in the air safely again, because I mean, to get 400 people vaccinated on a flight up in the air is no mean feat, and it's a pretty one-off really right now.
Any children?
Nope, happily.
Brilliant.
Best flight ever.
I'm on the same page as you.
Where did you go?
We took off from Dubai and then headed out towards Sharjah and then Ras Al Khaimah and then down towards Hatta, Fujairah and over towards Abu Dhabi and then back again. It was only supposed to be for a couple of hours.
Do you keep those air miles or not? Does they count or not?
Jim, that's the only drawback. I didn't get my Skywards miles on that flight. I'm so upset. I'm so upset.
But what you did get is duty free.
I did, thank you very much. Yes, I'm all right, Jack.
No, thank you very much indeed. I've enjoyed a Toblerone for breakfast, courtesy of you.
Oh, you're very welcome. Very welcome indeed. But no, just very well organised and great job. And you get little souvenir pins and things as well. And I've even got a look. I bought my show and tell in.
You've got certificates.
Certificates as well. That'll be framed.
Look at me. I flew. Just
super.
Sort of wrap up on. And again, I suppose it's the million-dollar question, isn't it? I mean, this was obviously a flight that was designed to celebrate the success of the UAE's vaccination program. It had a charitable element to it as well, giving to the to Emirates Airline Foundation. Did we have any indication on camera, off camera, on record or not, as to when the program might be rolled out anytime soon? Do we know when it's going to come into effect?
Which programs?
In terms of the vaccinations, getting on flights, vaccination passports, programs, etc.
Right. No, I did try and ask them.
It's the million-dollar question that none of us want to ask at the moment.
I did try and ask, and I was very lucky to get the time I did with the gentleman that I had was able to speak to. But there was a long queue, and there were certain questions that you could get. But no program really.
It's impossible.
Dates right now. I did try and ask. I even spoke to the gentleman, the deputy director of director general of the Dubai Health Authority, who was also on the plane, Professor Alawi, and tried to speak to him about vaccines. But he's very helpful, but no actual dates.
The very fact the DHA were on that flight, and the one message we're hearing from Emirates and others is this working together in tandem with other authorities. So obviously, we will have more information on that in due course. Nadia, appreciate you being back with us here on the ground. Thanks so much indeed for popping in to share your experiences.
Pleasure.
And Nadia Swan from the Era News team, who was up there in the air in EK 2021. And we're not jealous at all.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Tom, one of the big stories you were following over the weekend was the death on Friday of Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh, in the United Kingdom.
Yep, and to give him his official title, His Royal Highness the Prince Philip, Duke of Edinburgh, who sadly passed away on Friday afternoon. We got the news through, so it would have been Friday morning that it was filtering through from Windsor Castle and Buckingham Palace. Died peacefully, we understand, at the age of 99. Obviously, he's not been in rude health of late. We saw him in hospital 2 weeks ago was the last time we got a public sighting of him leaving hospital, albeit he walked to his own car and was driven to Windsor Castle. So he has been battling with health issues for quite some time, but passing away at home, surrounded by his loved ones. We understand that the Queen was at his side when he passed away. That has prompted an outpouring of remembrance, if you like, from world leaders. No shortage of messages being sent from leaders here in the UAE and the region as a whole, organisations that he was involved with, countries that he'd visited. But I think most pointedly and poignantly is the comments from his children, who've all gone on record giving their sort of insight, very personal insights into their father. I mean, everyone has an opinion on the royal family, regardless of whether you think we talk about it too much or not. Everyone's got an opinion on the royal family, either you're a fan or you're not, or you sit on the fence. You very rarely hear the royal family talking about the royal family. And I think that's what's unique about this one. Maybe it's part of this new transparency that they're trying to get to. But Prince Charles, the eldest son of Prince Philip, has been speaking very candidly about the man that he called Papa.
My dear Papa was a very special person who, I think, above all else, would have been amazed by the reaction and the touching things that have been said about him. And from that point of view, we are, my family, deeply grateful for all that. It will sustain us in this particular loss and at this particularly sad time.
Particularly sad time, particularly strange time in the UK as well. UK is a country that is not used to mourning periods, and they are in one at the moment. A great outpouring of grief being seen, with flowers and wreaths being laid at various sites across the UK, and then picked up straight away by the authorities, because you're not allowed to do that apparently during COVID-19. So we are seeing that. We're also seeing the respect that is being shown across the UK. Some very touching remembrances over the course of the last 48 hours, be that bell ringing, be that gun firing, be that moments of silence before sporting events. And it all build up to the final funeral, which is going to take place next Saturday, or sorry, this coming Saturday. It'll be 6 p.m. local time here in the UAE. Before that, there will be a moment of silence as well. The details are starting to filter through. Let's listen in to Sky's royal correspondent, Rhianna Mills, who's been outlining the details of the Duke of Edinburgh's funeral.
The funeral will take place Saturday at 3 o'clock. We also know that it will be a full ceremonial royal funeral. It won't be a state funeral. That is, of course, as we anticipated. We know that Prince Philip never wanted a fuss. It could have been the fact that the Queen could have allowed him to have a state funeral, which is usually afforded to monarchs, but the Queen could have allowed that to happen. But certainly the Duke did not want that to happen. But of course, because of COVID, it means that all of the ceremony and the military involvement has had to be significantly scaled back.
I think the most telling phrase in there is he didn't want to fuss.
Well, he planned it, had he not, by all accounts.
He has done a lot of planning of it. And the one thing that I love is the fact that it's his comment, allegedly, again. But basically, the car that is going to transport his body is an old Land Rover.
Oh, is it?
It's a Land Rover that he helped to design and modify. And legend has it, palace legend or otherwise, it says just sling me in the back of a Land Rover and drive me to the church. Drive me to the wherever. Drive me to the castle, that's right. So, yeah, his last journey from Westminster to Windsor Castle will be in the back of said Land Rover, which I think is a lovely little touch of the man that didn't bear fools lightly.
Well, tell me about that, because you're one of the few people I know, the only person I know who's met him. And you know several members of the royal family reasonably well, mainly his grandchildren, but Prince Charles also and Prince Philip as well. What's he like to have a conversation with?
He was just, I mean, a very, very brief opportunity that I got to meet him at a polo event several years ago over in the UK at the polo club that he actually founded, Guards Polo Club. A very affable man, had a very sort of a good sense of humour, but he couldn't bear faff. And he couldn't bear faffing around. The Archbishop of Canterbury has come out with a brilliant statement today. He said he remembers Prince Philip's righteous impatience. And I think that pretty much sums him up. He just, he couldn't deal with, which is so strange given, you know, the role he played. But if there was a delay to proceedings, yeah, that wasn't for him. But a genuinely lovely man. And again, I mean, I met him very briefly, but everyone I know who's spent time with him said that he was just brilliant company to be around. So a sad loss to the royal family. And I think a big loss to the royal family as well. Again, it goes back to everyone's got an opinion about the royal family. Prince Philip has been an ever constant of the royal family for the last 99, for the majority of our lives, that's for sure. And he will be much lost, not just to everyone out there, but the Queen as well. And I think the Queen is going to, as she said in her comments, you know, he's been my rock throughout.
And of course, he was immortalised in the TV series The Crown.
Don't mention The Crown.
Or has been. That's an accurate portrayal, or do we gloss over that one?
The Crown, as we know, is fiction.
Thank you very much indeed, Tom Urquhart. Prince Philip, who died this weekend at the age of 99.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Okay, let's dive into one of today's big talkers, if you like, the UAE tourism sector, recording the second highest hotel occupancy anywhere in the world. Forget the region, the world we're talking about here. And this, despite the fact of the coronavirus crisis last year. So 2020 could be looked at in something of a positive note. Or can it? And to crunch the numbers for us, we're joined on the line, but also joining us live on Microsoft Teams, Senior Manager in Hospitality and Leisure Division at CBRE. Bruno Trenchard joins us this morning. Bruno, good morning to you.
Hi, good morning, Tom.
Maybe you can crunch the numbers for us first and foremost. What do the occupancy rates look like?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the occupancy rates, which were released very recently for 2020, were really good for the UAE, I would say. As you mentioned, we are second only to China in the world, and we're coming second, very, very close to the first position. So good performance. We reached 55% occupancy rate in 2020 for the entire year, so including the couple of months before the COVID pandemic started in the region. But this is a very good occupancy rate, considering that the country was kind of closed for 2-3 months. And that we rely a lot on international tourism. Very good performance, still below the previous years, where we were probably slightly above 70% occupancy, but it's far from being a bad performance at a country level, considering really the entire country. 55% occupancy is a very, very good performance.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Bruno, because I was going to ask you about whether we need to look at these figures in relative terms at present, because a lot of people go, 55%, that's just over half. Surely that ain't nothing compared to years gone by. But I suppose when you take them in context of what happened last year, you can read them as good or positive numbers.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, 55% is good. Think of it. Remove 2 months out of the year, probably. Remove a lot of days where the demand was really, really low. 55% is actually a good performance. A lot of resorts, you know, in normal times, they perform around these types of occupancy rates. So nothing really alarming on that. And it's in a recovery phase. It's 55% in the year on average. It's not 55% yesterday, for instance. So recovery phase, it's going to be more next year for sure.
Yeah, you'll take 55, that's for sure. Let's look at some of the market trends, if we can, with you. Dare I say it, staycations playing a role?
Yes, completely. Staycation, domestic tourism are really two big trends that we've seen last year. It had started before COVID, but COVID really was a catalyst for this type of demand. So this has for sure helped reach this 55% occupancy. And the good thing with staycations and especially domestic tourism is that purchasing power in the UAE is relatively good. So the rates are quite decent in these segments. So that's good news for the industry. It helps maintain, to some extent, the ADRs, the average daily rates for the hotels. But definitely staycations is a big trend, and it has really helped the market last year.
Our numbers were second only to China worldwide. One assumes, therefore, that that was also driven by domestic tourism in China. Does that mean that the Chinese visitors where are the source markets, or have the source markets been for the UAE in the last year?
Mm-hmm. We've seen quite a change in source markets for the UAE. The reason is that the main markets for the UAE are closed, except for India. So main markets would be usually KSA. Oman is a very big market as well. China is a very fast growing and very large market for the UAE. So all those three have had some relatively strong restrictions in 2020. So we haven't received a lot of visitors from these countries. So the market had to look in another direction, I would say. India remained very strong. India remained the first source market for the UAE, no change on that. But Europe, Western Europe and Eastern Europe, including Russia, have been really big markets in 2020, especially in Q4 2020. And this has continued in Q1 2021, where we've seen a very, very important pickup in demand, especially from Eastern Europe, especially from Russia.
We saw a lot of positive narrative coming out of the UAE with regards to tourism within the last 12 months, certainly within the last 6 months as well, with the Coolest Winter campaign, the first federal domestic tourism campaign here in the region as well. Have they played their part, the fact that we have had that positive message? Has that got across, do you think?
Yes, definitely. But I think it's an effort from the government that has started several years ago. The government is really committed to tourism. Tourism is really one pillar of the economic growth in the country for all of the Emirates. So it has played a role this winter. Coolest Winter campaign was very nicely done. Mm. It's a modern campaign and it has good impact on the industry. And it has triggered some demand for residents to travel within the UAE to make them more aware of what's available to do in the country. That's just one proof of the government's commitment to tourism. There's a lot of other initiatives that are also proving this commitment. New visas, for instance, that have been launched in 2020, and a few other initiatives like that have really pushed for tourism to pick up in the country.
Right, that was 2020. We're in 2021 at the moment. How much of a legacy can we take from these positive numbers for 2020? Is 2021 looking any better?
Yes, it definitely is. And I'm sure everybody is very happy with that. 2021 is looking good. The first few months of 2021 have been good performance, to be fair. We've seen some hotels even in good areas of Dubai, leisure areas, that have been, I would say, impacted by the cap on occupancy rates, which is at 70% for hotels. They could have had more occupancy. Good for the industry. It's very good news. As I mentioned, very strong demand from Europe, Eastern and Western Europe. So that's good. The only little issue that I would point is that the rates, the average daily rates at the hotel, so basically the price customers pay, it's still below what we used to see in the past. We had a decreasing trend before COVID, so average rates were going down, but it has been even more severely impacted with COVID. So this is the little element that hoteliers are working on at the moment, trying to bring rates back up to previous levels.
The little theory I've got here, Bruno, and again, I'm not sure if I've got much to back it up, but I just want to get your thoughts in, is the fact that because of this proactive, positive approach to tourism from the UAE, they've won a lot of fans. They've convinced a lot of people for longer stays here, for more stays here as well. Is that a fair assumption of the market, and therefore looking forward and looking to the legacy, can the UAE look back at the way that they've dealt with tourism during COVID as potentially a positive?
Yes, and I think if you take Dubai as an example, the destination has benefited from a great deal of public PR during the end of the pandemic, I would say. And I think this is here to stay. A lot more Europeans, and this is especially true for Western Europe, France and UK are the biggest, the third and fourth market, I believe, for Q1 2021. It is really big. Then I think this trend is here to stay as well. It has really helped put Dubai on the map even more clearly for these destinations, for these source markets.
Well, that is good news for a senior manager in hospitality and leisure divisions at CBRE, that's for sure. It's good news for us as well. Bruno, really appreciate your time this morning. That was Bruno Trenchard joining us live on the line. So good times for hospitality. Long may they continue.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.